meet Tobias. The character is fictional. The experience is shared by people across London today. This is their story. In healthcare training across London constituencies, people who want to become nurses find themselves blocked not by their ability or dedication, but by artificial caps on training places that leave simulation labs empty while wards remain understaffed. This is what happened when Tobias tried to answer his calling to nursing in Chipping Barnet.
My sister Emma had her first panic attack during her second year at university. The waiting list for student counselling was 8 weeks. By the time she got an appointment, she'd dropped out and moved back home. Watching her struggle to get the mental health support she needed made something click for me. I was 26, still working at Argos, and I knew I wanted to do something that mattered. Healthcare felt like the obvious choice. I'd always been methodical about things, kept every receipt, filed every document. My dad used to joke that I organized my socks by color. So when I decided to apply for nursing, I researched everything. Entry requirements, course content, career progression. I even visited 3 different universities to see their facilities. Middlesex University had impressive simulation labs with computerized mannequins that could mimic cardiac arrests, childbirth complications, anything you might encounter on a ward. The technology was remarkable. I applied to Middlesex University's nursing program in 2018. My A-levels were decent, BBC, and I had years of customer service experience dealing with people under pressure. The admissions interview went well. The lecturer seemed genuinely interested in my motivation, asked thoughtful questions about why I wanted to switch careers. 2 weeks later, I got the acceptance letter. I was in. Then came the phone call. The admissions officer sounded apologetic. "I'm afraid we've had to cap this year's nursing cohort at 180 students, she explained. "Health Education England has imposed budget constraints. We have 200 places available, but we can only fund 180. I asked if I could defer to the following year. She said they couldn't guarantee the situation would be any different. I reapplied to University of Hertfordshire in 2019. Different university, same process. The interview went even better this time. I'd had a year to think about my answers. Again, I was accepted. Again, came the phone call. This time, it was clinical placement funding. NHS England has reduced our placement budget by 30%. The course coordinator told me, we simply cannot afford to run the program at full capacity. There is no funding. Those 3 words kept following me around. Everyone said them like they were a law of physics. The universities said it. The NHS said it. Even my dad, when I told him what was happening, shrugged and said, well, if there's no money, there's no money. By 2020, I was getting desperate. I tried Royal Free Hospital's direct entry program, a route where you train while working as a healthcare assistant. The recruitment manager, Sarah, was the most apologetic yet. Look, Tobias, she said, leaning forward across her desk. I've got ward managers calling me every week, begging for more staff. We're running on skeleton crews. But Treasury spending limits mean we cannot afford to run that program. It's not that we don't want to train you. We literally cannot fund additional training places. I walked out of that meeting feeling defeated. The whole thing made no sense to me, but I'd started accepting it as just the way things worked. There was no money. End of story. Then I walked past Middlesex University campus on my way to the bus stop. It was a Thursday afternoon, about 2 p.m. The nursing building was right there, big windows looking into those simulation labs I'd admired during my visit. They were empty, completely empty. Not a single student in sight. I stood there for 10 minutes, watching. Nothing. On my way home, I mentioned this to Mrs. Patterson, who lives 2 doors down from my parents. Turns out her daughter Claire is a qualified nurse who'd been unemployed for 4 months. She's been applying everywhere, Mrs. Patterson said, but they keep telling her there are no positions funded. The next week, I met another qualified nurse at the local coffee shop. David recently moved to the area, 8 years experience in intensive care, also unemployed, also being told there were no funded positions available. I started walking past that university building regularly. Tuesday afternoon, empty labs. Thursday morning, empty labs. Friday evening, empty labs. These weren't scheduled breaks between sessions. I checked the university website. Nursing students were supposed to be using those facilities 3 days a week for simulation training, but there they sat, all that expensive equipment completely unused. Something started to bother me about the phrase, "there is no money." I kept hearing it, but I could see with my own eyes that the resources existed. The building existed, the simulation equipment existed, the lecturers existed, I'd met them. The students who wanted to train existed, I was one of them. The qualified nurses who needed jobs existed. They were living in my neighborhood. If the government creates pounds, which it does, is right there on every note, Bank of England, issued by the government, then what exactly was it that there was no money for? The building was already built. The equipment was already bought. The people were already here, ready to work. I began to understand something I'd never thought about before. When Sarah at Royal Free Hospital said, "Treasury spending limits mean we cannot afford to run that program," she wasn't describing a fact about the universe. She was describing a choice that someone in Westminster had made. They'd decided not to spend pounds, pounds that they issue, to connect the people who wanted to train with the facilities that were sitting empty with the wards that desperately needed staff. The government that prints the money told me it couldn't find enough money to train me to do work that urgently needed doing, using facilities that already existed, alongside people who were ready to learn. It was like someone with a full toolbox telling you they can't fix your door, because they don't have any screws, while a box of screws sits unopened on the shelf behind them. I used to accept the excuse that there was no money. I hear it differently now. The government that prints the notes and mints the coins told me it could not find enough of them to train the people who were standing right there, ready to work. The real question was never about money. It was about whether the people existed, whether the skills could be taught, whether the materials were available. They were. All of them. The excuse was not a fact. It was a choice wrapped in the language of impossibility. The limit was never the money. The limit was the willingness to spend it into the places and the people who needed it. I'm still here. Still watching those empty simulation labs. Still meeting qualified healthcare workers who can't find funded positions. Still seeing wards that are understaffed, while the government that issues the currency claims it cannot afford to connect the workers to the work. This isn't just my story. It's the story of every constituency where people and needs exist side by side, while someone in Westminster says the cupboard is bare.
What Tobias experienced has a name: fake experts. This technique relies on citing economists or commentators who treat the household budget analogy as self-evident, as though repeating it makes it true. Think of how tobacco companies once paraded doctors in white coats to sell cigarettes, lending medical authority to what we now know was harmful nonsense. The white coat didn't make the cigarettes healthy, it just made people trust the lie. In Tobias's case, every official who said there is no funding was channeling fake expertise about how government budgets work. They spoke as though it was economic fact that the UK government, which issues pounds, could run out of pounds. Treasury officials, NHS managers, university administrators, all treating the household budget analogy as unquestionable truth, never acknowledging that governments with sovereign currencies work differently from households that must earn their income. When challenged with economists say we cannot spend more on health without causing inflation, the question becomes, which economists? The profession is divided. Many macroeconomists argue the binding constraint is real capacity, not currency. Economists say, without naming them, is an appeal to unnamed authority. The UK government issues its own currency. It does not need to find pounds before it spends them. The real constraint is resources, people, skills, materials, time. And in Tobias's constituency, those resources were sitting idle. The resources existed. The people existed. The decision not to connect them was political, not financial. Chipping Barnett ranks 412 out of 543 English constituencies on the English Indices of Deprivation 2025. The constituency has 1,142 registered charities, according to the Charity Commission Register. Local organisations receive £23.6 million in grants, tracked by 360, giving grant NAV. All sources are published at blockedbritain.co.uk. Blocked Britain tells the stories of people whose lives are shaped by the gap between what Britain needs and what its institutions choose to provide. Every character is fictional. Every situation is drawn from official statistics. Produced by Blocked Britain.